But seek the welfare of the city where I have sent you into exile, and pray to the Lord on its behalf, for in its welfare you will find your welfare. Most Hammersmith residents and some observant tourists have probably noticed a large traditional street lamp on the east side of Furnival Gardens, attached to the side of a rather grand house known as Westcott Lodge. The house, so I have been reliably informed, used to be the vicarage for St. Paul's Hammersmith. Suffice to say, it is no longer so, and hasn't been for some time. Vicarages, even in London, are now of humbler proportions, and few, if any, can boast such a prominent river location. But the street lamp on its side remains, and below it a plaque explaining its significance. It was a gift to the worshipful mayor of Hammersmith, Stanley Atkins, in 1963, from his counterpart in Berlin, Willy Brandt. Yes, actually another example of a mayor who later became prime minister, or the equivalent in Germany, chancellor. The Berlin street lamp, formerly illuminating a street in Berlin, was a token of friendship between the two city boroughs, Neukölln in West Berlin and Hammersmith and Fulham in West London. And this was undoubtedly more than the usual friendly gift exchange among twinned communities, because, of course, West Berlin owed its very existence to the Allies. The colossal Allied airlift, which defeated the 11-month Berlin blockade by the Soviet Union, was then still in recent memory, only 14 years earlier. British and American pilots and planes kept the city going. Between 5 and 8,000 tons of supplies were delivered daily. And today, the Allied Museum in Berlin is dedicated to telling this remarkable story of heroism, determination, and collaboration. By the time of Willy Brandt's visit here in Hammersmith, the wall in Berlin had already been up for 2 years. Germany was divided, and a Cold War well and truly underway. And yet, while the border between East and West seemed permanent and impenetrable, the West German government kept on making highly subsidized economic deals with East Germany, designed to forge links and relationships against all odds, to keep the doors open for a seemingly impossible reunification. But that is exactly what happened. And this year, we are marking the 30th anniversary. Who can forget those emotional scenes on our TV screens of people flooding across previously heavily guarded checkpoints, complete strangers hugging, and countless people scaling the wall and beginning to dismantle it with whatever tools they could find. A modern-day reminder that when all seems lost, there is still hope, and there is always something which can be done for the future. This is precisely the tone of the letter which the prophet Jeremiah sent to those in exile in Babylon, an extract of which we heard in our first reading. They were not to give up, not to lose heart, but instead to work and pray for the peace of the city they had been forcibly taken to. what sounds quite encouraging to us may have sounded anything but to the recipients. After all, they were captives among an unclean people and had lost all their power and influence. And Jeremiah was no favorite to the elite, which had been carried into exile to Babylon. He had been their main critic and had warned them of imminent disaster if they didn't mend their ways. If anything, they probably expected a "I told you so," but you wouldn't listen. But the prophet has changed his message. He has moved from warning to comfort, from challenge to encouragement. Something has shifted. Many commentators now hold that much of what we call the Old Testament was written as a response to the exile. To those who wrote and interpreted history, the exile was a defining calamity in their history and in their national psyche. Like no other event before, it raised doubts, questions of identity, questions of faith. How did we get here? How did we get into this mess? Has God forsaken us? Where did we go wrong? What do we have to do to ensure this can never happen again? Can we somehow get back to the status quo? How can we return to our own land and regain our sovereignty? And this kind of soul searching is good. Sadly, it often takes a crisis like exile or Brexit or knife crime or climate change before we stop and think and learn the lessons we should have learned a long time ago. And of course, this is in part the cry of Extinction Rebellion. The demonstrators passionately believe that the inconvenient and seemingly reckless interruptions they are causing are nothing in comparison to the ultimate conclusion they say we are heading towards. This, they say, is a crisis which will not allow us to learn a lesson. Any learning and reflecting, they believe, will be too late. But conclusions are themselves, I would like to suggest, limited and limiting. It is true that our actions have consequences, which is why we need prophetic voices to warn us, and we would be wise to heed such voices, make the necessary changes, and if possible, avert the consequences. But what doesn't help is starting to blame others, ourselves, or even God. The majority of theologians of Jeremiah's time concluded that the mess they were in was because God had abandoned them because of their wrongdoing. That somehow they had to find a way to appease God, to do better, to get themselves out of their own mess. But Jeremiah sees it differently. God has not forsaken them. They are to rebuild, to plant, to invest in their families and in the communities they live in. Seek the welfare of and peace of the city, and it will go well with you. And this promise is fulfilled some decades later. Under the protection of Cyrus, the exiles return to Jerusalem. And this, of course, is the very heart of the Christian message. The very life, death, and resurrection of Jesus Christ himself. It is a downward movement into suffering and death. But that is not the end. God did not leave his people in exile, and he did not leave Jesus in the grave. Good Friday is followed by Easter Sunday, and God's redemptive story still continues. Many years back, when somebody imagined and then suggested the Berlin airlift, nobody, absolutely nobody, actually believed it could be done. But they did it anyway. And few seriously believed the Berlin Wall would ever come down. When all seems lost, may we again be ready to hear God's message of comfort and hope, a hope which enables us to imagine, live, and work for God's redemptive future beyond anything we thought was possible. Amen.